Hey, it's Billy Bear and Dan Haggerty here. Today's show will focus on the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Our guest is Michael Bolden, founder and executive director of the 10th Amendment Center. Michael travels the country speaking to ever-increasing crowds about sticking to the Constitution. In his words, every issue, every time, no exceptions, no excuses. He often tells people that his viewpoints and positions defy the standard categories. He's not a conservative, not a Republican, not a Democrat, not a liberal. He's not even a libertarian or an anarchist. He's not an independent either. He just wants to live free. Welcome, Michael Bolden.
Awesome. Hey, glad to be here with you guys. How are you today?
Good, good. Good to have you. Michael, as you know, this show is heard by people all around the Philadelphia metro area. What have you got going on around here?
Oh, man. Well, first we got to start out with that important line, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And that means the federal government is authorized to do a limited number of things, a certain amount of stuff. And that stuff is spelled out pretty clearly in the Constitution. And everything else is supposed to be left to the states or the people themselves. And no matter how you look at it, whether you're looking at it in a conservative or a liberal standpoint, the federal government does a lot of stuff that it's not supposed to be doing. So that leaves us with an essential question. When it does this, when it violates the rules given to it by we the people of the several states in the Constitution, what do we do about it? This is the essential question. When government does things it's not supposed to do, how do you stop it? Do we vote the bums out? Do we go to the federal courts? Do we march on D.C.? Well, we the people, at least here at the 10th Amendment Center, and me personally, I believe we the people, left, right, and center, have been taking these types of actions for a long time, and the result has not been too good. For the past 100 years, no matter what political party is in power or what individual has occupied the White House, federal power always grows. So all this stuff is not working. So we've got a different answer, and we're going back in history to look to Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, who gave us a different answer, and that's something called nullification. Hopefully we can talk about it. I know we've got a whole hour here, so we can get into some details. But we've been going around the country touring to explain to people about this principle of nullification. And we're targeting towards the early December to do an event in Philadelphia to explain to people of both, I guess I hope they cross the state lines, both New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and maybe even down to Maryland. People can come together and learn, well, hey, things haven't been working. Is there a different solution? But I could ramble on that all day.
No, no rambling on this show.
Of course not.
So Michael, what made the 10th Amendment, what made you decide to focus on the 10th Amendment as opposed to any other amendment? I mean, what's the significance of it in particular?
Well, as I was alluding to, the 10th Amendment is some people would call it the exclamation point of the Constitution. Thomas Jefferson called it the cornerstone or the basic foundation. It explains how the entire Constitution is supposed to be read. It's read as a delegation or a listed delegation of powers. They're called enumerated powers. And it therefore applies to everything. So anytime the federal government does something, you just kind of first start out by looking into the Constitution and seeing if you can find the authority to do that there. And if not, they're not supposed to touch it. So the reason I did it is I was so sick and tired of conservatives who preached limited government, and then when they got into the federal government, they would expand the power of government. And liberals who preached, oh, well, we want to see the federal government stop violating civil liberties, a form of limiting government power. And then when they get into office, they expand violations of civil liberties. So I saw both sides as being a complete failure and a bunch of frauds. And so I thought the message of the Founding Fathers was very important, something that we hadn't heard a lot. I know I didn't hear it a lot while the Bush administration was in office, and I founded the organization back in 2006, now 5 years that we've been running. Some people in Tea Parties would see that almost as ancient these days, because we started before Obama, well before Obama got into office. And the idea was just, let's start reaching people that there are different solutions, and sometimes we can reach back into the memory hole of history to look at that tired old evil document, the Constitution, and come up with ways to expand freedom, which will result in more prosperity for all of us.
You know, Michael, that's very interesting. You were doing this before the Obama disaster that befell the country. So you're really taking a constitutional viewpoint. But let me ask you, is there anything personal that made you just get up one day and kind of like Travis Bickle and the taxi driver said, here's a guy who would not take it anymore? What happened with you?
Well, I don't know if there was anything really just one moment in time that I said, okay, I'm done. I had been doing political activism for quite some time in various forms. And being from California, I associated with a lot of lefties. I grew up a commie, of all things, surprisingly enough. I went to government school and for many years, and I learned that all solutions to problems were fixed by government. But I guess over time you just learn, and hopefully people learn that that is just a losing argument. It's a failure and it's a lie. I know I did. And in time, I just recognized, like I was saying, it didn't matter what political party was in power. Things just kept getting worse, whether it's foreign policy, domestic policy, civil liberties issues, economic issues, all of it. Government just keeps growing. And even, and I got to say it, even the great conservative Ron Reagan, if you look at the size of government before he got into office and after, it was much larger after he left. And we always hear excuses. We hear excuses that it's done for this reason or that reason or this reason or that reason. We hear it from every administration. We hear the lefties today who hated Bush for the foreign policy and the Patriot Act. Well, now they're apologizing for Obama dropping bombs on Libya. They're apologizing for Obama extending the Patriot Act. Suddenly they don't care because their team's on side. And I'm sick and tired of just rooting for one team or the other because it doesn't work, because the only team that should matter should be ourselves, our family, our neighbors, and expanding our liberty. And that's the team that we, the people, have not been rooting for. We've been trapped. We've fallen into the trick of picking one team or the other in Washington, D.C., and they're laughing all the way to the bank.
You know, I look at your website, Michael, and you do point that out. You say that this left-right paradigm that we've been working under is artificially imposed on us. I mean, we're taught to look at left versus right, but that's not really it.
I'd rather look at us versus them. I may not agree with everything that my neighbor may have to say, or people around my state of California, and there's probably a lot that I disagree with. But, and the founders created the system for a reason, we're going to have a much better chance of having those arguments on a state, a local, a town, or even a family level than we will ever have of having it on a national level. This system, this tenther system that the pundits, that the people like MSNBC, the New York Times, and the politicians want us to believe is evil and full of hate, this system of decentralization, this system of federalism, this is the only system ever created, known to man, at least that I'm aware of, that you can have a wide range of political, economic, and religious viewpoints all living together in a huge defense umbrella in peace. Because what's right for California may not be right for South Carolina, which may not be right for New Jersey. And when you have all these different ways of trying things around the country, you know, you at least have a chance. If you've got a one-size-fits-all solution, which we've had on just about everything for quite a long time, whether it's light bulbs the size of a toilet, what plant we can grow, or health care is now going to be another one. When you have bad decisions made, all of us are screwed, pardon my language, but that's really the truth of it. When you decentralize and you allow each area to make their own decisions, they may be bad. States do a lot of bad stuff, but at least you've got an escape route. If the policies of New Jersey and New Hampshire are different, you can go just a short distance and get up to New Hampshire and find something a little different. Now, there are differences among the states these days, but they're not as much as they're supposed to be, and they're getting less and less every year.
So Michael, it's kind of like, it sounds like what might be analogous is talking about the two parties in particular. is having a trying to have a substantive argument about the differences between Coke and Pepsi.
Well, sure, sure. I mean, we can talk about, we had an article on our website that was written by one of our state chapter coordinators, Connor Boyack. He runs our Utah chapter for the 10th Amendment Center. And he wrote this just after the last Republican debate in Ames, Iowa. It was titled, Rick Santorum and Barack Obama, Two Peas in a Pod? And to many people, that would be kind of a shocking statement. How can Santorum and Obama be similar at all? Well, they may not be similar on their policy prescriptions, but what Connor was saying, and I think he makes a pretty solid argument, you might want to, I'm not going to read through the whole article, but he makes a pretty solid argument that both of these guys have the same type of philosophy behind what they're getting at, which is all decisions, all roads lead to Rome, Washington, D.C. Rick Santorum wants to impose national standards on certain conservative issues, which appeal to many conservatives. And Obama wants to impose national standards on progressive or liberal issues, light bulbs, toilet size, health care mandates, things like that. But the problem is, if you support national solutions on things that are not authorized by the Constitution for someone that you may like or for policies you like, what you've just done is you've encouraged and, more importantly, you've empowered your opponent to do the same, and they're going to use that power against you. And if we have not learned that now by what's happened with Barack Obama following George Bush, I don't know if we ever will. I sure hope people are waking up to the reality, to the truth, that you cannot in any circumstance champion an expanded view of power for the federal government in violation of the Constitution, because somebody, even if they use that power in a good way, eventually someone is going to use it against you, and we've got a lot of problems already.
So, Michael, just I know you read this in the beginning. I just want to read it again just so our listeners understand very clearly what we're talking about. The 10th Amendment, the power is not delegated to the United States, by meaning the federal government, by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. That's really the foundation of this, but it almost seems like the 10th Amendment most recently has been rediscovered as if, you know, we've been in, clearly, been in violation of this for decades, perhaps over 100 years, really, and yet it seems to be rediscovered now. Why is it like a new thing, it seems?
Well, what's old is new, I guess, sometimes, and I'm happy that it's gotten a resurgence. The key is that we have, all of us, have a lot to learn, including myself, about the proper role of government, what the founders would have wanted for a particular situation under the rules that they gave for the government. Like I said, we started the organization, 10th Amendment Center, which people can find online if I got to plug it, 10thamendmentcenter.com. Back in 2006, because we recognized that Bush policies, for example, the Real ID Act, which would have imposed a national standard on ID cards around the country. I don't see that in the Constitution. The No Child Left Behind Act, this is national standards for education. That's also not in the Constitution. That's not authorized to the federal government. The Patriot Act was violations of parts of the Bill of Rights, not authorized by the Constitution. Medicare Part D, which was passed by Republicans in 2003. If you want to know where Obama somehow got the authority to expand federal control over health care, just look what happened in 2003. Bush gave us the greatest expansion of government, federal government-run health care with the Medicare Part D Act, or whatever they called it, in decades. And people turned a blind eye to it because they liked other policies that Bush had. What we stand for, and you mentioned earlier, is the Constitution, every issue, every time, no exceptions, no excuses. Because every single time we turned a blind eye, every time that we allow politicians to bend the rules of the Constitution or break them, even if it's for a good reason, sooner or later, those politicians or future ones are going to think those rules don't apply at all. And if we're not there, we're pretty darn close.
So, Michael, I guess you're not familiar with the Commerce Clause, then, are you?
Oh, yeah. Federal government can do whatever it wants as long as it can claim that you are somehow involved in commerce or you might be thinking about it in 10 years. That's the way
right.
They describe it.
Whether it affects it or actually not having an effect is, in a sense, affecting interstate commerce, right?
Well, the way that the federal government, the Commerce Clause, it's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, if we want to get boring, of the Constitution, it says that the Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce among the several states. And the way that the founders originally meant for this was basically, if we're going to get as basic as possible, to make sure that we didn't have, State A, let's say Kansas and Nebraska setting up, well, I guess it wouldn't have been those two states at the time, Virginia and Maryland setting up trade restrictions on each other. They didn't want to have tariffs among the states. The federal government would come in and make sure that that stuff was all a nice free trade zone around the country, and all those rules of goods crossing state lines, transactions across state lines, would be uniform. But what they've turned that into, and it's primarily through fiat power of the judiciary branches, they can control, regulate, prohibit, ban, or make rules on anything that moves, breathes, or that you might think about moving sometime in the future. And any government with that kind of power should not be trusted, because it's a tyranny.
Well, Michael, part of the misinterpretation of the Commerce Clause stems from the word regulate, or to make regular.
Yes.
Many people think it means regulate the way we use the term today, meaning that the federal government could control something. But that's not really what it means. It means to make regular, to facilitate a way for commerce to be not impeded. Same as with the well-regulated militia. Same type of thing with the Second Amendment. It had to do with making regular and being organized, not a matter of being controlled by an entity.
And I'd love to have a 45-minute discussion, we could, just on the Commerce Clause, because there's some fascinating history. But what you're bringing up here is a very important principle in understanding the Constitution. Mind you, although it's written in plain English, this is an 18th-century legal document written with specific legal terminology. And if like any legal document, the words of the Constitution mean today just what they meant the moment it was signed or ratified by the people, we have to understand what those words meant at the moment of the ratification. So the word regulate today could mean ban, prohibit, control, require. That's the way people use it today. But the legal meaning in an 18th century sense was much more similar to what you were saying then. This is something that is covered pretty much in depth, how to view the Constitution. We published a book by a great constitutional scholar, Rob Nadelson. It's available on our website, called The Original Constitution, and it gives you the basis of what the legal meaning of each part of the Constitution was at the moment it was signed. And for many things, it's far different and far more limiting than what anyone would ever expect. General welfare has nothing to do with the idea of providing welfare checks to some people on a general basis, as you probably already know. But I'm really glad you brought that up about the Commerce Clause, because it means something completely different today. And that's why it's important to educate people, because, as long as people don't know what government is supposed to be doing or not supposed to be doing, how can they ever stop it? They have to have a good foundation first before they can stand up and say, no, we won't take it anymore.
Well, Michael, one thing, that's exactly right, but one thing that prevents that is this idea that's been imposed upon us that the Constitution is a living, breathing document and should conform to the requirements of a maturing, evolving society.
Yes. Well, you just had Kevin Gutzman on, was it last week?
Yeah, the week before, yes, you're right.
Okay,
so
Kevin, the way he's described, and this guy is one of the best of the best in understanding how the Constitution is supposed to be set up, and he basically says, if the Constitution is a living, breathing document, it's in essence a dead one. When I sign a contract, let's say an employment contract, it doesn't change as the winds blow. There has to be amendments to that contract if both parties to the contract decide they want to change it. And in Article 5 of the Constitution, if people want to change it, if we, the people of the several states, say, okay, yes, we want to ban a particular light bulb and the federal government isn't authorized to do it, I guess they could pass that stupid amendment. I don't think it would work. And I really believe that most of the power that's just taken by Congress, the executive, and the judiciary, they'd never bring up the idea of amendments, because if you're requiring a vast majority of people to approve it, they realize that it's going to get rejected. So as long as we, the people, stay asleep at the wheel and not know what their limits are supposed to be, we're going to continue having what we have.
Michael, since you mentioned our guest a couple of weeks ago, Kevin Guzman, his book, Who Killed the Constitution, the premise of that book is that in the Constitution is really no longer in effect. We're discussing this as if the 10th Amendment and other amendments and obviously other parts of the Constitution are binding upon us, but his premise is that it's basically dead already. I mean, how do we...
Yep.
It was something that was a very hard concept to grasp when we discussed this a few weeks ago, but it seems as if that's the premise upon which this federal government is functioning at this point.
Yeah, and Karen wrote an exclusive article for us a couple of years ago, a Bill of Rights Day discussion. That's December 15th, 10th Amendment Day. It's when the Bill of Rights was included. And the title was the Vision of the Founders Dead and Gone. Well, I think he's right. The Constitution isn't active today. If the federal government can tell us everything from when we can live and die to what plants we can have in our yard, what size toilet we have to purchase a product, control everything in every business, they can tell localities what kind of signs to have on their streets, how big the letters need to be. They're talking about spending money in Los Angeles to expand a money-losing rail system. I mean, I use it, so I got to admit, but... you know, this has no help on the state of New Jersey or Texas or anywhere else. They're just throwing money here and there. They're buying votes. They're making rules. They're bombing places like Libya when they're without congressional declarations of war. They just change the meaning of words left and right. The Constitution is not in effect in Washington, D.C., but what I am excited about is that the principles of the Constitution are rekindling in the hearts and mind of we the people. And John Adams many years ago said, you know, the revolution, the war against England, the revolution really wasn't about the war. It was a change in the hearts and the minds and the beliefs of the people decades beforehand, which led to more freedom for we the people. And I see, while we've got a long way to go, I really believe we're in the midst of a revolution, or maybe an evolution, a peaceful growing of a desire for freedom and limited government, something more than it's probably been seen in a long, long time in this country.
Well, that's very interesting you mentioned that, because as you know, Billy, my co-host, and I attended one of your events in New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
One of your Nullify Now events, and as you know, we had an outstanding time there. One of your speakers, of course, was Thomas Woods, who's written many books, the most important of which, I think, is Nullification. And I've got to say, that was just an outstanding event that you conducted, and Thomas Woods was great. You know, one of the things he says is that you just talked about a contract, Michael, and that's essentially what the Constitution is. One of his great little anecdotes is, look, you and I have a contract, we have a dispute, and I say to you, look, I'm going to bring in my mother, and she'll decide the issue. He said, that's essentially what we have when the federal judiciary, the Supreme Court, makes a decision binding on the states, on an issue between the states and the federal government. So essentially, he's saying you can't trust that, because the Supreme Court is the federal government, and what states have to do is nullify laws that are unconstitutional, not in an arbitrary manner, but laws which are clearly against the Constitution. Now, that's one of your main points with Nullify Now, isn't it?
Sure. And first of all, the event that we're planning in Philadelphia, we're targeting December 3rd. We have yet to confirm the venue yet, but that should be happening soon. If anyone wants to stay in tune with what's going on and be able to jump on tickets and learn what speakers are going to be there, the website is nullifynow.com/Philadelphia. And you can browse around the website and see a number of the other events. We've been doing this for a year. We've done 9 or 10 locations around the country. In fact, we just had one last weekend in Kansas City where Tom was also the keynote speaker. And he talks about this idea that, well, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison both warned us that if the federal government ever became the sole and exclusive arbiter of the extent of its own powers, that power would always grow. I mean, if the federal government is going to say, you know, they're going to not only exercise the power, but they're also going to be the one who determines whether or not they have too much power, we should not be surprised if that power never stops growing. So Jefferson and Madison back in 1798, they were dealing with an expansion of power already, and they said, well, there's got to be something else that should be done. Well, the states, or we the people of the several states, the people of the states, well, they're the ones who created the federal government. So they obviously have a lot of say in what should be considered constitutional or not. It should not just be the federal government, and therefore they both said, and these are known as the principles of 98 when Jefferson and Madison wrote what was known as the Kentucky and Virginia Resolutions, that when the federal government does exercise powers not delegated to it, it's not just a good idea, but it's a duty of a state to stand up and say no, do what they can do, do anything possible to block implementation of that particular unconstitutional act in their state borders. And, you know, this is not just some historical good idea. At our events around the country, and we'll be going into a lot of detail in Philly as well, this type of stuff is actually happening around the country right now. It's been very effective, and it gives me not only a light bulb, but a glimmering of hope that although we can't count on Washington, D.C. to fix the problems that it created itself, there is hope because we, the people in our own states, the states can and must say no to Washington, and when enough people in enough states say no to Washington, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to force their unconstitutional regulations, laws, and mandates down our throats.
Michael, along the lines of what we were saying a couple of minutes ago about the Supreme Court being the arbiter of what's constitutional vis-a-vis the federal government and the state, just thinking, how many federal laws has the Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional? You would think there'd be quite a few, because you know, how is that played out?
Well, that's a great comment. This is something that Tom talks about quite often, and Kevin Gutzman, and even Judge Napolitano will bring up. The Supreme Court almost never limits power. I mean, they almost never do. Occasionally they do, but the vast majority of the time, they almost act like a rubber stamp and either rejecting to hear a case or applying bad case precedent rather than looking to what the founders said the Constitution would mean. And so many people think that, well, if the Supreme Court says something, then, oh, well, then that's the way it's got to be. Well, I kind of believe that someone like Andrew Jackson, although he isn't technically a founding father, but he had a good way of dealing with the Supreme Court when they make incorrect rulings, because they do. They once ruled that a black person was subhuman, and they were wrong. They once ruled that if you grew a plant in your backyard, wheat, and you didn't buy it or sell it, and it never crossed state lines, that was somehow interstate commerce. They were wrong. They ruled again on the same issue years later here in California, but the plant was weed rather than wheat. They were wrong on that, too. Well, Andrew Jackson, when the Supreme Court made a bad ruling on the Federal Reserve or a central bank, he basically said, all right, well, you got your opinion. Now come and enforce it. And if we start learning that we don't really have to be afraid of Washington, D.C., and we can have the attitude of, great, well, thanks for sharing your ideas, we're going to live free whether you want us to or not, then, and I believe only then, will we start moving towards real freedom.
So, Michael, give us a hard example of what would be a way and an issue that a state would actually nullify.
Well, I can give examples that have happened just in recent history. One would be the Real ID Act that I mentioned. It was passed in 2005, and this was many people have called it a national ID card. It was basically telling each state that they had a particular ID card and they were going to store certain types of information. Some people thought it was great to deal with immigration issues. Some people thought it was horrible on privacy issues. Either way, whether it's good or bad, the important thing is the federal government authorized in the Constitution to dictate to states what kind of identification cards they're going to have in their own states? And I would argue no. I think any constitutionalist should argue no. But what happened with the 2005 Real ID Act? Well, it was supposed to be implemented in 2008. And a year before that, states like Maine and Utah and New Hampshire started passing both non-binding resolutions and binding laws saying, hey, in short, this is not authorized to the federal government. This is a violation of our state's rights, and we will not comply. Whoa, well, what do you mean, we will not comply? The federal government passed the law. That was the attitude that the feds had. But other states started getting on board and saying, well, we won't comply either. And eventually 10 or 12 states got on board, and instead of that law getting implemented in 2008, the federal government had to back off and delay implementation. So that encouraged more states to get on board and do the same. And we saw this play out until now. Today, there's more than two dozen states that have said, no, we will not comply with the Real ID Act. And although the law has never been repealed, it's still on the books in Congress. It's never been challenged in court, never been ruled unconstitutional. It still sits there supposedly active. But in most of the country, it lies dormant, null and void. Why? Because mass state resistance did not allow the federal government to get it implemented.
Michael, let's take something very high-stakes issue that we're all familiar with, Obamacare. This is working its way through, which I would think that you have a problem with just in concept, working its way through the federal courts, through the state courts, and ultimately it's going to be decided, if we want to call it that, by the U.S. Supreme Court. How is that really inconsistent with the concept of nullification, and what would the alternative be to the way it's proceeding through the system?
Well, nullification is not about going to Washington, D.C., and getting a permission slip from the federal government or any of its branches to be free. When the Supreme Court once in a while rules that the federal government has overstepped its bounds, it's in essence saying, okay, people, we're wrong and we're sorry it took 2 or 4 or 6 years to get to us and all your rights have been violated, but now you can go ahead and be free and live the way you're supposed to be, and the feds are going to stop doing what they've been doing. Well, this is not what nullification is about. Jefferson and Madison and many of the other founders, Sam Adams and others, recognize that when governments violate rights, we don't have to wait for that government to decide that it's going to stop violating our rights. It just takes enough of us to say we're going to be free whether you want us to or not. So waiting for the courts to tell us that we're going to be free, that's not nullification. Although if the courts do rule against Obamacare, I will applaud it. That will be great. It will help reverse some really bad precedent. I don't count on it, and I don't expect it, because they generally don't do a good job. So we have actually created, to run concurrently while people are focused on this court issue, something for grassroots activists to work on. I know Allison McHose there in New Jersey introduced a version of our model legislation called the Federal Health Care Nullification Act. And what this bill says is that the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, which is known as Obamacare popularly, in total, not just the mandates, but the entire premise of the federal government being involved in the health care business in the way that it is with that act, is not constitutional. It's not something that was authorized to them. So every single word of that bill is unconstitutional and therefore null and void in the state of New Jersey. It shouldn't exist. And on top of it, the state should actually include penalties to any federal agents who are trying to violate the state law if it were to pass. Now, if New Jersey went at a...
That's a good segue into what I wanted to ask you. The example of the TSA and the proposed Texas legislation. Explain mm-hmm. what happened to that. I mean, that was a bizarre occurrence, the way the federal government essentially, it sounded like they were going to impose a no-fly zone over Texas if the state asserted their rights.
Well, I think the issue is we've got great concepts that we're talking about here, saying no to Washington, D.C. I think that makes sense to everyone, liberal, conservative, and in between. A liberal does not want the federal government to be involved in banning marijuana plants. A conservative does not want to be involved in EPA regulations. I mean, these are just single examples. But for everyone, there's something that the federal government does that it shouldn't be doing, and these are ideas that we can empower individual people to stand up and have some backbone and push maybe their state governments to have some backbone and do things. And it's playing out, like I said, with Real ID, other issues as well, which we'll cover at the Philadelphia Nullify Now event, and show how we, the people, can be successful, whereas voting never, ever reduces the size of government.
Well, Michael, Dan and I had an interesting experience. We had a town hall meeting type of forum with some of our more conservative state representatives and senators, and Dan had an exchange with one of them, and specifically was discussing nullification, and the probably the most conservative assemblyman in New Jersey retorted, well, the feds have a bigger army than we do. I mean, the idea that the federal government is going to impose their will on the states as an entity and on the people is just—it's just amazing to me that this is what we're discussing at this time.
Well, unfortunately, there are some state representatives that are frightened little girls, and that's the sad truth of it. Allison McHose obviously is not. When I talked to her and I interviewed her for our own weekly podcast as well, she said, you know, she recognized that, you know, obviously the assembly there, the head of the House, is not going to let this bill get voted on. They hate her. But she realizes that it's essential to bring up nullification as a possible idea for people in New Jersey, so you can get the grassroots talking about it, learning about it, and thinking about it as an option, and moving in that direction. Unfortunately, some conservatives don't have the backbone. They don't have the courage to at least give it a shot and recognize that it's not only just a good idea, but it's their duty. If they're swearing an oath to the Constitution of the state and the federal government, if they're swearing an oath to protect your rights, they need to do something instead of saying, oh, well, we can't do anything. And the truth of the matter is, the federal government on the Real ID issue issued all kinds of threats to people. In fact, up in Montana in early 2008, they threatened that no one was going to be able to get on a plane unless Montana got the new Real ID identification card. And on NPR, Governor Brian Schweitzer was asked, well, what do you think about these threats from the Bush administration? Your people aren't going to be able to fly? And you know what his response was? Well, quote, we feel it's best to just tell them to go to hell, and we'll govern our state the way we want to. And that's the type of attitude that works. There were no tanks rolling into Montana to force people to get ID cards, and there hasn't been since. So, like I said, when enough people say no, we can actually have an effect. But you bring up the Texas issue, and it's important to recognize that one state going alone is going to have a difficult time. Whatever your viewpoint on SB 1070 down in Arizona, I think this gives us a very good example. You may be for or against it. That's less of the point of what I'm bringing up. But what is important to recognize is that when Arizona decided to do something, and they were really the only ones doing it, the federal government came down on them pretty hard, and it's hard to really get past that. It's difficult. It's scary. The federal government is a lot of bad guys. And when Texas, our friend David Simpson, who has now spoken at two of our Nullify Now events, one in Fort Worth and one in Austin, he introduced a bill to make it illegal for TSA agents to search you without probable cause, you know, basic Fourth Amendment stuff. As long as you have probable cause, you think someone's a criminal, you know, basic legal precedent, search them, great, but you need that. Not everyone can be treated but like a criminal in the United States. They're not supposed to be. And the Senate and the House were ready to pass this thing, ready to go to make TSA agents, liable for criminal charges, and the federal government threatened. The Department of Justice issued a letter saying, State of Texas, if you guys pass this, we may just have to shut down all air travel. And instead of having some backbone, again, many politicians are weak, they crumbled. I know that if there were 5-10 other states doing the same thing, as we've seen with Real ID, we've also seen this with medical marijuana in 15 states around the country, the federal government really does not have the power, and in fact, they really are kind of a house of cards in many ways. They're not going to get away with it. They need to stay in power. And if they're starting to shut down air travel around the country, I say bring it on, because they're going to come crumbling down real fast if you're telling millions and millions of people you can't fly because we don't want you to violate the Fourth Amendment. So I know in New Jersey, McHose, and I can't remember the other senator, who sponsored some anti-TSA legislation. I don't know if that carries over from session to session or not, but I think it's important for New Jersey to get on board with that. I know Michigan is now going to join in after Texas was pushed against by the federal government. Within days, Michigan and Utah both said, well, next year we're going to have legislation on this as well. Alaska will be doing the same. Washington State, we expect to see 15 states possibly with bills to ban unconstitutional actions by the TSA on a state level. And when you have 10, 15 states considering or doing this, it becomes much harder for Washington, D.C. to scare off politicians, because while politicians are oftentimes slimy people, when they have a lot of support behind them or pushing them in one direction, they tend to do it. So let's see that happen in New Jersey and elsewhere.
As Benjamin Franklin said, we hang together or we hang separately.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, I understand that most of the legislature in Texas wanted to fight the federal government on this, but it was that alleged conservative...
Joe Strauss.
Strauss and Governor Perry was not in the mood to fight the federal government on this. If you listen to certain Texans like Alex Jones, he says that Governor Perry is the darling choice of the Bilderberg Group and therefore would not fight the federal government under any circumstances.
Well, at our Nullify Now event in Fort Worth last September, we had a great state senator from Oklahoma, Randy Brogdon. This guy's been a constitutional champion. He's loved by conservatives in Oklahoma, which is a very conservative state. He came down and spoke, and he talked about another thing that Governor Perry did, which was not friendly to Constitution. He was accepting all kinds of money from the federal government to build this international highway where Mexican trucks could go unimpeded from Mexico City all the way up to Kansas City. And you know what Brogdon said? Well, we passed a bill in our state of Oklahoma, and we made that tollway or that highway have the biggest U-turn in Texas history because they were able to stop it at the state border by saying no. So the federal government, Texas, no one could do it. Rick Perry, none of them were able to get it through because people in the state of Oklahoma had courage to make it stop.
Yeah, and most likely what Obama would do in a situation like that, I think, is use his executive orders to impose UN regulations and foreign agreements without treaties, actually, without having them approved by the Senate, which is in the Constitution.
Sure, well, they do this stuff all the time. Agenda 21 is a growing problem. I don't know how much you discuss about that. I'm not a real expert on Agenda 21, but I do know that it definitely ties in with foreign agreements and things like that that are violations of the Constitution. They just try to kind of go around it. Well, if people go along with it, you know, and we sit around doing nothing and maybe just complain, oh, this is bad, well, we know what's going to happen. We already see all around us. The economy is bad. Our rights are getting violated. It's just on and on, and it's worse and worse every year. So if we sit around and do nothing, obviously we know where we're going. The snowball to tyranny is well upon us. So the question is, when are we going to say enough is enough?
Well, exactly. I mean, we have to keep waking people up. Now, I see on your website, as I've looked at it, you have representatives in most of the states. In fact, you've got a very good coordinator here in New Jersey, Brenda Poland. I've worked with her, and she has done nullification presentations at various tea parties. So you've got some good people working for you, and I think if you continue that effort, you'll awaken consciousness in every state.
Well, what's exciting about this movement for the Constitution, this great awakening towards the founding principles, is that there are many, many people all across the country, like us, like you, the listeners, that are hungry for information, that want to learn, and that are not too proud to admit that, yeah, I went to a government-run school, or I went to a private school with government-approved textbooks, and most of what I learned was wrong. So I'm willing, and I'm excited to learn what the founders told us. And people like Brenda take that, rise to the occasion, and take that and go from town to town and explain to people what the proper role of government is, what the right of the people in the states are when the government, when the feds violate the Constitution. And we just need more people just to say, you know what, it's time for me to do something. I may want to watch the game on Sunday, but you know what, there's going to be many more games to watch on Sunday. This week I'm going to take 2 hours out, and I'm going to go meet with people, I'm going to go educate, and I'm going to learn myself, and I'm going to make a difference in my lifetime. Judge Napolitano, about 2 years ago, he spoke at the first that I know of, large 10th Amendment state sovereignty only rally. It was in Ohio. 10,000 people came out in support of the 10th Amendment in Ohio and to see Judge Knapp. And he said there are, this is a paraphrase, but he basically said there are very few generations with the great opportunity to defend liberty at its greatest moment of danger. And he followed by saying, this is that moment and you are that generation. And I believe he was right.
So Michael, just it seems like what we're really talking about, or what seems like your mission is to have a paradigm shift occur here where people don't see the federal government as the daddy government, but they see the federal government as being very, very limited in what they can do and what they can't do. And also, I totally lost my train of thought.
Well, I think what you had to say there is absolutely true, and I would almost take it to another point, maybe a little more aggressive. I am hoping that many people start seeing the federal government as a nuisance. Not that we want to get rid of it totally, but in my view, 90% of what it does, it shouldn't be doing. So, yeah, it is a nuisance. Get out of my life. Allow me to live my life. Allow me to make bad choices, and allow me to learn and grow as a human being, and allow the same of other people. You've been stifling innovation for too long. You've been forcing us into a one-size-fits-all when humans are not one-size-fits-all. South Carolinians and New Jerseyites are not the same people. We all have different heritage, different background, different lifestyles. Allow people to gravitate towards what works best for them. And you know what? Lead by example. When people in Kansas try something, and maybe someone in Kansas pushes something that's completely dumb, let them do it. Let them do something dumb so their neighbors can learn through experience. And this is what a good moral lifestyle really is all about, if we're talking about even on an individual level. Try things, work hard, do what you think is right, and when you screw up, you screw up, and then try to change things. The federal government does not allow us to do these things.
Michael, Billy's train of thought is back on the track, so...
Great. Well, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, what I wanted to ask you about is the concept of the state representatives interceding or interposing on behalf of the citizens of the individual states relative to the federal government. It seems like that concept is something that very few people understand at all.
Yeah, exactly. When Billy and I were in that town hall meeting, and I spoke to our assemblyman, who's very conservative. In fact, the entire group of them said, well, those are federal issues. We can't deal with them. And I asked them, I said, well, wait a minute. You're representing us. That doesn't mean you can't decide things and undertake actions against federal behavior. I mean, that's what nullification is. They don't seem to understand that.
Maybe they do understand it, and they're just scared, or maybe they don't. We hear from state reps all across the country as we've built this 10th Amendment and nullification movement and kind of spearheaded it and allowed the grassroots to do their own thing. As this has grown, we hear from state reps all over the place say, wow, I didn't realize this was an option. And other ones are like, oh, no, I can't do that. I'll lose my seat. They'll vote me out. The media will attack me. So we have some that are afraid. There are some that just don't know. But think about it. If the federal government decided to ban all guns in New Jersey, let's say, I mean, it's bad enough there after on gun rights already, but let's say they said no one will ever, I mean, at least you got a little glimmer of some gun rights in New Jersey, but let's say the feds came in and said no more guns, no more knives, no nothing. I mean, would these so-called conservatives just stand there and say, okay, well, you know, the feds told us we couldn't do this? I mean, is there no limit? Where does the federal government cross the line? That's where what question I have to ask. How much is too much before these state reps actually say, okay, I'm going to do something? And I would challenge them with that. I would say, well, let's say they imposed a particular religion. We all had to show up on Thursday to some kind of service that you don't agree with. Would you then continue to go, or would you put a law in New Jersey to say that that federal law is null and void and a violation of the Constitution? Where is the line for these people? When is enough enough, and when will they do something? Find it out. It'll be a good meter for who to vote out of office.
Exactly. Well, this might be a little corny, but one of the things we told the representatives at this town hall meeting was, look, we're here in, it was actually Morristown, New Jersey, which, as you may know, is the headquarters of the American Military Revolution. Washington had his headquarters, and this is about a mile away from where we had the town hall meeting. And we said, look, you know, we like to think we're the inheritors of the revolution from Washington and those people. They signed the Declaration of Independence knowing that they could be hanged or that they could lose everything they had. You know, what are you guys willing to do? And, you know, they don't even want to risk their pensions. So.
Right. A lot of those guys don't even want to pass a non-binding resolution to say, you know, and we've seen these passed in a couple dozen states around the country over the last few years that says, you know, the federal government is authorized to do X, and everything else should be left to the states. So our state is therefore issuing a warning to the federal government that it needs to stop or will take extra actions. Non-binding, all it does is just get the issue out into the public sphere, say this is the role of the state, and just get the ball rolling. A lot of them are afraid to even do that, not even a binding thing. And that would, I think that would give you a very good indication of who to not support.
Michael, you know, you mentioned Agenda 21 before. We were at a presentation last night about Agenda 21. That's not even the reason we went there, but we sat through the presentation, and I'll tell you, it would make your hair stand on end. Some of the goals in Agenda 21, the elimination of private property is one of the ultimate goals. Along the way, two of the things that they need to be eliminated, golf courses.
Really? I didn't know that one.
I'll tell you, they had a whole list of things. You need to look into Agenda 21. It's a lot worse than people think. Well, one of the things we were talking about last night was activity. You know, kind of like the activity you're doing. And here in New Jersey, for example, on September 3rd, our group is having a cruise in New York Harbor. We've got a boat. We're going to have about 400 people on the boat. It's a large 150-foot vessel, and we're going to do a reflaying ceremony outside of the World Trade Center area. And then later on, we're going to sail around to the East River, and we're going to be in front of the United Nations building with a giant banner that says "No Agenda 21."
Nice.
And one of our guests, and our guest speaker at that venue is going to be John McManus, if you know who he is.
Oh, we know John. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to be excellent. You know, we're encouraging the listeners in our area to call us up and find out about this boat cruise. It's sponsored by AmericansForLiberty.com, and people should look it up on the website. It's a lot like a Nullify Now event, we think. It's raising people's awareness. That's really what it is.
Like I said earlier, I don't really know a lot personally about Agenda 21. What I know is bad, and what we are actually exploring as well, and we're going to be having a speaker, it looks like, down at our Jacksonville event on October 22nd to address what can states and local communities do in a nullification sense to reject Agenda 21. And I think that's something we need to continue to explore. So any information you can share with me, please shoot me an email, or people out there, you can just go to 10thAmendmentCenter.com, hit the feedback button on the side there, and give us some information, things that you think that we should be aware of that this is bringing upon states and local communities.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of information, and we can get that to you on Agenda 21. It's just one of the many things wrong. Go ahead, Billy.
Yeah, no, it seems like the real challenge is to get our state representatives to stand up to the federal government on the specific issues that are clearly on its face unconstitutional. That's really the challenge. How do we get these guys to stand up? I mean, like we already established, most of them are afraid to stand up for anything. A little ridicule is too much for them to stand up against. How do the people get these representatives to do the right thing relative to the federal government and the unconstitutional impositions upon us?
Well, it's important to recognize that the politicians are often kind of a slimy lot. They're not necessarily great. There are some very good ones on local levels out there, and it's rare on a federal level, but there are some good ones. But politicians, they really kind of want something to work to their advantage. And as long as sitting there doing nothing is a greater advantage than hearing how they've screwed up, they're going to continue doing that. So I think one of the first steps is that everyone possible, needs to make Allison McHose a champion there. Make sure that everyone knows that whether everything she does is great or not is not really the point, but the fact that she was the one who had the backbone and the courage to bring up the idea of nullification in regards to Obamacare, everyone needs to start making noise about that. So some other politician who's like, wow, Allison's getting a lot of attention there. I'd like to be popular as a politician, too, so I can get reelected. Well, maybe they'll get on board and co-sponsor, or maybe they'll introduce a bill regarding the TSA, or maybe blocking No Child Left Behind because the federal government should not be involved in education standards. Something
Michael,
like that. They need to recognize that it's possible.
You just again mentioned the health care bill. What do we do if this case gets to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says, sorry, it's constitutional? What are these 29 or so states going to do? It seems like they're almost precluded, at least logically, from pursuing a nullification-type approach after they've already conceded jurisdiction, in a sense, of the U.S. Supreme Court.
I'm not going to take that position because, and I know, I wish we had another hour to talk about this, but even when the Supreme Court rules against us, we can and have, in recent years, stopped Washington, D.C. It doesn't matter what Washington does when enough of us say no. I mean, what's going to happen if the Supreme Court says, oh, yeah, Obamacare is constitutional, they can force you to do whatever they want, and then 20, 25 states pass laws to ban it, and say any federal agent trying to enforce this, we're going to throw them in a prison cell. Half the country is doing this. Now we've got a real standoff. They're not going to be able to. They're not going to be able to push this through. It's just not going to happen. We have to say no, no matter what the black robe deities, the politically connected lawyers on the Supreme Court, unaccountable. No matter what they say, we still have to say no.
So, but in a sense, isn't there a bit of a logical disconnect to say that the Supreme Court, we're essentially giving jurisdiction to them or allowing ourselves to be placed under their authority, but if they don't rule the way we want, we're not going to do what they say anyway. It seems to be a little bit of a disconnect there.
Well, for me, I don't really put any hope in the Supreme Court, and I don't promote going to the court system, but I think there's still a vast number of people that think that this is what you're supposed to do. So as long as people want to use this as an outlet, they're going to keep doing it. And even if it leads us in a bad direction, we still have to do what's right, and no matter what the result. The key is
that would you say that in a sense we have to corporately go through the motions of allowing the federal government to do the right thing before we can do it?
I would just not comply. We don't need the Supreme Court to tell us that Obamacare and forcing people to buy stuff is unconstitutional. We just have to say, you know what, it doesn't apply. But a lot of people believe that they need to go to the court. Well, what I hope is to educate people on the reality that we don't necessarily have to go that route and spend all that money and time and be under the thumb of the feds. And maybe we'll continue to change more minds and open more eyes to a different process. And as the Supreme Court keeps making bad rulings, which I expect them to do, then more and more people will come over to our side and start learning to be free no matter what, whether there's a court case or not.
Yes, I believe you're right. I believe that with a serious popular uprising, the justices on the Supreme Court will, you know, they'll suddenly find their way back to some constitutional values.
We're out of time, Michael, but we want to have you back, especially a little before the what's tentatively scheduled for December in Philadelphia, Nullify Now. Our guest was Michael Bolden, founder and executive director of the 10th Amendment Center. And that's about it for now. Basically, nullification. If it's unconstitutional, just tell the federal government no. Billy and Dan out.
Okay, take care, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys, for having me on.